each one of their course selections would also continue remotely. Appendix E really does highlight and show examples of both a four-period and a five-period day. I won't go through them in detail, but I will highlight the fact that last time we brought to trustees a model where we had 150 minutes followed by 350-minute classes. Through discussions and collaboration with the teachers' bargaining unit of OSSTF, we've further refined this so that the collective agreements are honored, and we really are still maximizing the amount of direct instruction time that students have. We're very pleased that we're able to refine this model, because we do think it is one that will work the very best for our students and for our staff should we be required to be in an adaptive mode or a scenario B. So essentially, students again would attend for 145 minutes in one of their courses. There would be a built-in dismissal and break time of 80 minutes, allowing students time to travel, allowing students time to have their lunch. And then that would be followed by three courses of 40 minutes each done remotely. And this would be adjusted accordingly for those five period days. I will highlight again, and through our review this morning with the Ministry of Education, we did spend a fair bit of time on this, that this model allows students to continue with the four assigned courses throughout the semester. It allows students, it allows us to move into this scenario if we were in scenario A or scenario C and we needed to shift into scenario B. It also, through this improvement, would allow us to move from a scenario B or an adaptive mode back into a conventional mode without a lot of disruption. We see this as being really beneficial. The transportation would, as we highlighted last time, continue to be not at the dismissal time, but students would remain in the school, and if they required bus transportation through a school bus, then that would occur at the end of the regular school day, and they would have an opportunity to stay in the school supervised with access to their devices to continue the remote learning and their other courses. Similar to elementary, we will be utilizing the parent portal to ask parents and those students who are 18 years and older to indicate if their preference would be to continue remote learning exclusively and not attend in person. Once again, the planning will be to provide each student with either a cohort A or a cohort B designation, and then depending on where we are during the school year and which scenario, their cohort designation would apply. I am, just for reference points, still on page 3-8, section 7, almost there. Students requiring special education supports and services. To highlight here again that a number of the routines that will take place as part of the enhanced public health measures will either be adapted for a small group of students, but most importantly, what the teams from specialized services have been working on is the transition from the school closure this summer to a return to school. And so the plan is, where possible, to have in-person school visits, particularly for those students requiring moderate to significant levels of special education support, scheduling that prior to the start of school, helping families with a variety of resources to ready their child, their teen, to come back into the school environment. We are looking at adaptations again to our signs, to our process charts, so that they are accessible by all learners, even those who may not access print at this time, and at the same time being age appropriate. Protocols are being put in place for the various service providers that we know will continue to be required to access our schools to support our students. And so we're working with them and with public health to ensure that the protocols are in place. A change that was highlighted last time that I'll make note of again is that in order to minimize student movement, maintain student cohorts, there will be a shift in some of the program delivery, whether it's in conventional or in the adaptive modes, scenario A or scenario B. So off-site programs, such as the Innovation Center, Center for Success, the Excel Centers, the Elementary Social Communications Program, these will all be delivered through an itinerant approach, where staff and specialized services will meet students in their schools and their classrooms rather than the students attending these off-site programs. The off-site programs draw students from a variety of different schools. That establishes a very different cohort, and again, based on the advice from public health, maintaining a cohort of students that is as consistent as possible is really important in any of our return scenarios. And so I'll also highlight that some of our high-intensity support programs, such as Empower, both at the elementary and secondary levels, the AIM program at elementary, will continue, whether it's in scenario A, B, or C. And again, very pleased to say that even during the school closure, many of these high-intensity programs did continue, thanks to the tremendous work of our staff. Students who are assigned to self-contained special education classes, and then those who are in regular class, whose either their diagnosis or their particular disability requires direct support to access the curriculum and attend, may require very significant assistance, limited independence. Some of these are examples of where these are the students who will be provided an opportunity to attend in person daily should we need to be in scenario B. So while scenario B, students will be in cohorts A and B and may attend on different days, those students that I just described in the self-contained classes or requiring those significant additional supports and services, there will be an opportunity for them to attend on a daily basis. Again, keeping with our guiding principle, we are going to make every effort to minimize the disruption, but it may become operationally necessary to change a student's assignment and or the assigned staff to meet these needs. Again, that's not the plan, but it may become necessary depending on how many students and the staff assignments that we have. I will highlight as well at the top of 3-9 that all students receiving special education support will be monitored throughout the adaptive phase or scenario B, and may be offered that opportunity to attend in person daily should the need arise. We'll first look at that group that I just described, but then through careful monitoring may expand that again to others. In the event that we do need to move to a full remote learning or a scenario C, Daily instruction will occur. Specialized services staff have created a whole host of resources to support staff, to support students, support families with remote learning, and you can see some examples of that in Appendix F. The last couple of sections before I turn it over to Stacy to provide us an update on some of the financial implications. Transportation, again, want to highlight that for trustees that we've been working very closely with the Coterminous Board and with the Hamilton-Wentworth Transportation Services to establish the protocols that have been outlined in Transport Canada's guidance for school bus operators, whether it be regular cleaning, wearing a face coverings and masks for drivers, potentially for riders. That is something that is still being discussed right now. Physical distancing measures, whether it's in scenario A where possible, and certainly for scenario B where cohorting is necessary, then restricting the number of students on a bus at any given time to ensure that physical distancing. The enhanced cleaning of high-touch surfaces, again, will be applied. And to note for trustees, as this may arise, is, while at this time, courtesy transportation will continue, it may become necessary due to operational demands or other public health circumstances to suspend that offering. So right now, the plan is to continue to offer it, following the same policy and procedures that we would in any given year, but there may be a need to alter that going forward. The other point around transportation that I do want to highlight is that we are maintaining for both elementary and secondary schools our bell times at the start and the end of the day, even though in secondary in an adaptive mode or scenario B, we would be dismissing students after the 145 minutes. The bell times for the beginning and the end of the day will remain. Transportation is being, and routes are being developed based on those existing bell times, again, in keeping with minimizing the disruption to a regular school day and also in terms of our fiscal responsibility. The costs to alter those times would be very significant, we're going to maintain the bell times and the route times as well for drop-off and pick-up. Section 9 on technology, this is something that we highlighted for the Ministry of Education in a meeting that we had earlier today. Trustees, of course, will be familiar with our 21st Century Learning Strategy, the provisioning of devices to our secondary school students, the class kits for grades 4 to 8, and the work that was done during school closure to ensure that all students had access to a device and students had access to an internet-enabled device if there was required. Through the broadband project with the ministry, that has been completed, and you'll see at the end of that paragraph that each one of our schools does have access up to a gigabyte, which is quite significant. Before I turn it over to Stacy for Section 10, I will just jump to Section 11 on page 3-10, the school year calendar, which trustees approved back on July the 13th, has been submitted to the Ministry of Education for approval. And again, I'll highlight the fact that with the approval by the board and submission to the ministry of that school year calendar, we do have the three professional activity days at the beginning of September prior to students arriving, and that again, a very significant portion of those days will be spent around the enhanced public health safety measures and just really that readiness for staff in order to support students as they return. So with that, I've completed each one of these sections, but I will turn it over to Associate Director Zucker to provide an update on the financial implications. Stacey?
Thank you, Peter. And for trustees, if you follow along on 3-24, which is Appendix G, it is an estimate of our costs associated with all of the increased requirements for COVID-19. And so before I start going through them, I will say that we're in various stages of purchasing for these items. Some of them have already been purchased and are being delivered right now and within the next couple of weeks. And for the remainder, the ministry has now stepped in, and they are requiring boards to do their purchasing through the Ministry of Government and Consumer Services, MGCS. So they are expecting us to use them, and the prices that they expect to be able to get for some of these items are a lot cheaper than some boards are able to get them for, and including us, the prices that they've been talking about are a little bit lower than the ones that we've been using, so that's good news. The other thing that I'll say is anything that we've purchased now and that gets delivered before the end of the school year, although we're using it for the next school year, because it's delivered and we have ownership of it, it would actually go into the cost for 19-20. So that is good news from a budget perspective, because there are obviously costs in 19-20 that were lower than expected, and there were some COVID-related savings. And I think that's the expectation of the ministry as well, is that some of those savings would be applied for some of the additional expenses that are going to happen with regards to the items that we're going to talk about. So the first thing that we'll talk about is the personal protective equipment, or the PPE. And again, this changes on a regular basis, and we still don't have 100% clear direction from the ministry. I know that that directors have been and chairs have been asking the ministry for consistency across the province. I know that this is a significant concern when we talk to our union groups and about the concerns about coming back to work. So currently we have orders in for shields and for disposable type 1 medical grade masks. We have an order in for approximately 1,500. We are actually going to increase that number, and we are ordering one shield, so those are reusable per school-based employee, and then we expect two masks per day per employee to go with those masks, and we order them for our school-based employees. So as you can see, that's a fairly significant cost at $540,000, and the shields are approximately $35,000. Again, these are our best estimates at this time. Once we have the exact information from the ministry with regards to costs, and if there will be any funding attached to these costs, then we will be able to update trustees further. As far as gloves go, there will be no additional gloves required in comparison to prior years. So we still have custodial staff that will be using gloves. We will have some of our educational assistants and ECEs, depending on the tasks that are being performed. Also for first aid, we would have gloves as well. So we don't expect an additional cost for gloves in comparison to prior years related to COVID. And again, as Peter mentioned, proper hand hygiene is an important part of the expectations of public health to assist, I guess, with the spread of COVID. Excuse me. So we would be making sure that is adhered to for staff as well. As far as gowns go, again, we would be using these when we are, say, supervising symptomatic students and in first aid emergencies, and maybe possibly some individual situations. So again, we've estimated our cost there at about $16,000. Before the decision was made with regards to the medical grade masks and shields for all school-based employees, we had ordered reusable cloth face coverings for staff, and so we had ordered approximately 14,000. And again, they will unlikely be used for staff in this purpose, but we don't think that they will go unused. In fact, when we're looking at other staff or potentially students, depending on the direction from the ministry, then that's what we would be able to use those for. When we talk about hand hygiene, we do know that we have approximately just under 1,000 classrooms without sinks. And there are other areas like offices or departments that we would have used hand sanitizer in. Each 1 liter bottle of hand sanitizer is about 30 applications. So our estimates for hand sanitizer, as you can see, 794,000 are quite high given the usage. And again, these costs are our best estimates, and these are for an entire school year. So for the entire 10 months that we would be in school, this would be the expected cost. When we look at our hand soap, and then I'll talk about disinfectants and disposable cleaning costs, we use these regularly on a day-to-day basis now, but we would expect to be about tripling the regular use, so the additional costs related to hand soap, disinfectant, and disposable cloth cleaners. As you can see there, 173,000, 75,000, 18,000. Plexiglass barriers, we have ordered these plexiglass barriers, one permanent for the offices and the schools, plus four movable barriers per school, and some in the education center where necessary. Already we have those, so that's a cost that we've incurred of 85,000. We're looking at HVAC inspections, not that our staff can't do them, and we can. It's just we want to make sure that we can do them all by the time that we need to do them, and to possibly have that third-party confirmation maybe alleviate some concerns from the public. So we are looking at the possibility of having a third-party perform these inspections. It would be about $2,000 per school. And then there are other costs related to COVID, such as signage, floor decals, other things, which we're estimating at $100,000. So in total, we're looking at just over $2 million. So again, that $2 million, some of it will be spent in the current year, and has been spent already, and will be applied against our projected surplus that we have for 2019-20. The rest of it that we will order through MGCS will be in next year's budget. So we have not budgeted for that. So we will either be looking for additional funding sources from the ministry, or that is where we would dip into our contingency. But as trustees know, we do have approximately $2 million in our contingency due to the additional money that came in part of the budget, and this is one of the areas where we were able to spend the budget. So that's good news. And then the next part of this appendix, again, it's just, as Peter mentioned, he discussed the plan to be able to provide remote learning to students, and that is that those students will remain the responsibility of the classroom teacher that they have been assigned to. If it's not the case, and in order to maintain the fluidity so that they can move from remote learning to in-class learning, they would have to be part of a cohort, but they would have to have, so we wouldn't reorganize necessarily, but we would require occasional teachers to teach these students. And the best information that we had was based on the parent survey that had over 10,000 people respond to it, and about 15% of the families said that they would not be sending their kids back to school in the fall at that time. That was their thought. So even if we assume that 15% in just, again, high-level assumptions of class size of 23 and average cost for a teacher of $85,000, we're looking at over $27 million, well, almost $28 million. So obviously that is not an expense which we can afford. And so that just financially supports the model that we are proposing. So this is, again, just for information purposes. So I'm going to stop there, and I'll turn it back to you, Peter, if you have any concluding remarks.
Thanks, Stacy. I'm actually going to turn it over to Manny and then take any questions that trustees might have.
So thank you, Peter. So before I pass over to the chair, we'll answer any questions. I just want to acknowledge that we are in sort of building the plane, flying the plane as we go along, and as we get more information, we're making the necessary changes. I hope trustees can see the amount of work that's been done over the last 2 weeks as we've been receiving updated information and consulting with stakeholders and our union partners. I'm proud of the team, the work they've done, but we know we have a lot more work to do as more information comes. And most recently today, the chair and myself, we're on a conversation with the minister, as he's committed every Monday. And we have been told that there will be further information coming this week with updated ministry guidelines from the June guidelines. And we're also being told that there'll be greater clarity around some PPEs and potentially funding to support training of staff, not just permanent staff. We know the importance of training of our occasional staff will be coming into support as well. We're hearing that this information should be coming by the end of the week. And again, we'll adapt and change as this new information comes, but we have some solid plans that we will continue to tweak. And I must say that I'm proud of the collective team, and what you heard Peter present and Stacey is the collective effort of the entire senior team who's taking on various ad hoc committees. And we meet every Wednesday as a senior team, and we invite some of our managers to join us to review our plans and to make a decision based on updated information. So with that, I will pass it back to the chair, and we will answer any questions from the Board of Trustees.
Thank you, Director Figueredo, and thank you again to the entire staff team. I am going to start making my way through the roll call list, and we'll start with Trustee Archer.
Okay, thank you. That was a great report. Thank you for the information. I understand that staff will have equipment provided for them. What about the students that need masks? Mandatory for students to wear masks? How do we help the families that can't afford the masks and supply equipment that's needed?
Great question. Kathy, our turn. Left. Nope. Director Figueredo, I'm going to have, we're going to wait until Trustee Archer is back on the phone in order to address her question. So in the meantime, we'll move along to Trustee Bingham.
Thank you. It's easy enough to hit the wrong button on these things with everything. I want to say kudos to the whole team, because this has just been incredible. Everything that they've had to do for the past, 6 months or so, it's been amazing. I do have some questions. Kathy, Trustee Archer did ask my first question about masks for students and families who can't afford it. So we'll wait for that answer for when she gets back. Students who don't follow the rules, is there going to be consequences for them? And I'm concerned mostly around issues of, I hate the term bullying, not only in the classrooms, but socially.
Joined.
Students who just don't want to follow those rules, are there going to actually be some consequences for those actions and things? What would we do about that? That's my first question.
Thanks, Christine. Thanks, Trustee Bingham. And just before we head over to the director, Kathy Archer, are you back on the line? Did I hear Trustee Archer come back on?
Hello? Can you hear me?
We can. So, Trustee Archer, we're just...
I'm sorry.
Moved over.
I hung up.
No problem. We just moved over to Trustee Bingham. I'm going to have her complete her questions, and then we're going to come right back to you. Okay?
Okay. Thank you. Sorry.
No problem. So, with that, Director Figueredo, to Trustee Bingham's questions around student behavior and how we will be addressing any concerns that may and certainly will arise. Thank you.
So thank you. Through the chair, I'll be passing all these questions to Peter, and he will direct them to different people who may have more details. So to that question, I'll pass it to Peter. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Manny. And through the chair, always education first. In terms of the signage, the lessons, making students aware that we are going into an environment that is going to look different and will have different expectations of everyone. That's first and foremost. Obviously, within our school communities, we do expect certain levels of behavior from all of our students at an age-appropriate manner. Should the need arise, then of course staff would potentially need to engage with students to the point where there may be consequences depending on the severity of their actions. But I would say at first we are always going to lead with awareness and education and really building those relationships. And I would highlight for all trustees, and to your question, Trustee Bingham, the incredible amount of work that's gone into developing many of the lessons and the resources, including the signage, so that we can support staff to support students as we move into these new environments.
Trustee Bingham?
A real concern that came up was students who have anxiety about everything that's going on, and they're in the classroom anyways, so not having other students making fun of them for wearing those masks or doing those things. That's kind of where that came from on that. School council, parent council, and fundraising and everything, that's going to end up being put on hold, I'm going to assume. So anything that the schools were working toward fundraising, are they still going to be able to do a version of that, or are they still going to be able to, is parent council still going to be able to get together in one way or another, even if it's remotely?
Director?
I'll pass it on the questions to Peter. Thank you.
Great, and thank you for the question. We are, through Superintendent Stefanian, looking at school councils, what they might look like for September and beyond, depending on which scenario that we find ourselves in. So thank you very much for the question, Trustee Bingham. There is yet another ad hoc committee and working group looking to address some of those issues.
Trustee Bingham.
Two short ones. I'm realizing that Glenwood School would end up with probably a lot more PPE, such as the gowns and everything, because I realize those who do need the one-to-one support. If anything, Glenwood sometimes has a two, and I know we spoke of this before. Would they be supplied with extra PPE?
I think
for
someone's
staff?
Phone is not on. Sorry to cut in. Someone's phone is not on mute. So, folks, just make sure you are on mute. Sorry about that, Christine.
No problem.
Please continue.
So, I'm just wondering if there's going to be extra PPE that's going to be sent to the Glenwood School for staff. And if necessary, students as well.
Thank you, and through the chair, absolutely, as part of our resourcing the necessary supplies, we are factoring in not only those that are required based on our current understanding, but also additional resources, and certainly a school, as you've indicated, such as Glenwood, but also other circumstances where we know that additional supplies would be required. That's all the work that's going on through our procurement department. So we are expecting, as Stacey has highlighted as well, that we have sufficient supplies in all of these categories for the months of September and October, and then rolling onwards from there, ensuring that we have enough supplies well in advance.
Trustee Bingham.
Thank you. The last one I want to work around is everything was everywhere. Again, towards families who do not have the means for internet or devices for it, I'm concerned about parent portals for some of those families who just don't have access to it. I'm wondering if there's going to be other ways of making sure that all families are, when we talk about parent portal, that all families will be communicated to. We're talking about the 5 days difference and things like that, so that they're not 3 days behind all other parents who can access the parent portal and things like that. Will that be addressed in another way?
Associate Director Sovereign.
Thank you. And through the chair, excellent question, Trustee Bingham, in terms of, you know, our ensuring that we have accessibility for all. Again, some working committees have taken away the work that we're developing on the parent portal and developing the additional scenarios where we know some families might have more limited access. There may be communication challenges. So we're putting in place a variety of different steps so that we do have accessibility by all. We just felt it was really important to establish one mechanism that is connected into our student information system so that really critical, important information is there and up to date for all authorized staff that would need to have that information readily available. How we get that information in, we appreciate that it may take multiple entry points, including and not limited to, you know, direct follow-up phone calls from the school to individual families. But again, thank you for the question. It is something that we continue to work on.
Thank you so much. Great. Any further questions, Trustee Bingham?
No, no further questions. I'm just absolutely grateful for everything that staff is doing.
Thank you. Trustee Buck. I think you need to go back to Trustee Archer.
Archer, correct. Sorry.
Trustee Archer, you'd asked a question, a really great question around students who are unable to afford face masks. And here in Hamilton, of course, we have the second highest child poverty rate in the province. So did you want to further detail that question at all, or would you like me to just pass it over to the Associate Director?
Yes, thank you for getting back to me. Yes, I'd like to know if we have anything in plan in place for the families that need the support. So I know that myself with our program, we're struggling to do, you know, get supplies ready for back to school. And, you know, we have some masks that we can provide, but we can't fill everybody's needs. So I'm just wondering if the board has even thought about that, especially when I hear that the board's paying for staff to have their supplies. What do we do about the children, the students?
Associate Director.
Thank you, and through the chair. So I'll begin just by stating that at this time, we are awaiting further direction from the Ministry of Education in regards to face coverings and or masks, particularly for students, and whether or not it'll be a requirement, and if so, will it differ by age, grades, and so on. But I will say that should they be required, much like we do for all of our schools and students, wherever there's a required resource and if there are challenges in terms of being able to secure those resources by families, then we have other supports in place at both the school and at the board level. So to your question, I don't have a direct answer. Have we thought of this? Absolutely. Are we continuing to consult with our public health colleagues? Yes. And we are certainly awaiting further direction from the ministry before we make any further directions. But more generally speaking, if there's a need and if there's a family in need, I would want us to be reassured that our schools and essentially as a board have always endeavored to ensure that there aren't the inequities for these necessary resources.
Through the chair, it's Manny, if I could just interject as well. So just a reminder to trustees, based on the guidelines from June 22nd from the ministry, where we can't physically distance, we're required to provide medical-grade masks for students and staff. That's already been procured. Stacy's team is looking at it from the ministry portal as well, of how many we would need for all students. If that requirement comes from the ministry that all students will require them, or certain students, depending on the grade. But for the students that we require right now, they've already been purchased. And again, the ministry told us we'll have further clarification by the end of this week and potentially some additional funding and support to help boards with those increased demands. So thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Archer?
Thank you, Manny. Thank you.
Okay. Trustee Buss, you're up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to try and be short and sweet with my questions. I have a lot written down, but I'm going to try and pick and choose, and hopefully other people maybe touch on the same things. And what I don't hear tonight, I'm going to get in contact with Peter Sovereign just to make sure I am understanding everything correctly. So to start, the hydration stations, will these be permanently fixed in our schools? And when I say that, I mean like built into walls and into our plumbing directly, so similar to how a water fountain is, or would these be standalone units? And if they are built into the school, will this be complete in time for September?
Associate Director Sovereign.
Thank you. And through the chair, I am going to pass that question over to my colleague, Stacey Zucker.
Thank you, Peter. And through the chair, we have only 17 schools that do not have a water filling station right now. And those 17 schools will be getting permanent fillers, and if you know them, they won't be the bubblers, but they will just be a regular filler, and they will be permanent, and I'm forgetting the rest of your question. Sorry, I'm blank.
Trustee Buck, do you want to clarify items that were missed?
No, that is pretty clear. I was just more wondering, like, is this something that's going to be temporary, or will it become a permanent fixture, literally?
Oh, and sorry, I remember that. You asked if they would be done by September, and the answer is yes, that's the intention.
Okay, that's great to hear. Do we know at this point if we will actually move away from having water fountains in our schools? When we look ahead, I feel like the world itself has changed in the way that we've done things. Pretty much everything's not going to be left unaffected. So will we be removing our water fountains in time?
I appreciate Director Zucker.
Thank you. And through the chair, we haven't made that determination at this time, but you're right, that's something that we would be considering. Right now, we're begging them and taking them offline.
Okay, Thank you for that. Moving along, so we're limiting access to schools, which completely makes sense. I did want to note that this is there will be an impact just on this note alone. So I think of our high priority schools as for schools that had reading programs with some of our community partners. So I think of Neighbor to Neighbor had been in several, I believe it's called the Jack program, where they come in and they read with students. And the reason I say it's going to be a huge impact is because this was really our community coming together, parents or grandparents coming in and helping the classroom that they had a student in. And without that additional support, we really added so much value. And without that, I think we're going to see a bit of a shift in our data reflecting like specifically our early years readers. So our goal to have students reading by the end of grade one, for instance. So do we know if we move to the scenario where everybody's in school all of the time, that we can maybe adjust this as the school year goes on and new information is and new direction is given by the ministry to allow volunteers back into the school in these types of scenarios?
And I'm gonna start with directing this over to the director, because I know that there is some information around students achievement, especially with regards to all students reading by the end of grade one, and then director, you can delegate as needed. Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Peter Chair. So, before I pass on to Peter, Trustee Baca, really appreciate your question, because the current guidelines are trying to limit the number of people within the building because of contact tracing and obviously potential. Spreading of the virus. And we are concerned, the longer the schools are closed, we're just concerned, especially around our early reading. We'll be bringing a report around our results and how we were on track to obtain our reading by grade one target of 75 this year. But in the mode we were in, we dipped and fell short. We dipped from that. So further information is going to come as we're analyzing the results. But your other question around partners and volunteers, I know Sean and his team are still working with partners, and partners have reached out. We do have cleaning protocols. We do right now have to limit, but what we've been told by the ministry is that we're going to have to be able to transition not only between our own three scenarios, but adapt to more information as it comes. So as the province opens up and as regions change, school boards are also going to have to be prepared to transition and open up more services within the school, including volunteers and partners. But we will need to be prepared as a regional approach, but we'll still need to make sure we're getting that guidance from public health as well at the local level. I think I've captured it, but I'll see if there's anything else Peter wanted to add.
Thanks, Manny, and through the chair. I would just echo your comments, and again, going back to our guiding principles, that the health and safety of everyone is paramount, but also, trying to minimize the disruptions to regular routines and regular routines in schools, as you've indicated, Trustee Buck, in a high-priority school could involve a variety of community members, family members coming into the school. So none of what we're putting in place is without revisiting on a regular basis, as the director has indicated, depending on the public health circumstances and based on advice. So for the plan in front of us currently in terms of re-entering in September, the access will be more restricted, but we will continue to monitor that based on the guiding principles that we're working with.
Further questions?
Thank you so much for those responses. I really appreciate that that's something that you guys have identified and is a priority as we move through different phases and different recommendations and instructions from the ministry and even monitoring what public health is saying here in Hamilton. So, yeah, just the value that our volunteers, that our community partners and people who come into the school to help teachers, it's something I think we're going to see a bit of an effect of in the first few months, but if it's something that we're prioritizing as restrictions lighten, I think that's a great thing. I did have a question around the parent portal. Do we have an expected timeline of when that will become available? Associate Director Sovereign?
Thank you, and through the chair. We are continuing to work on not only having it ready, but also testing to make sure that, once we do put it out, it is fully functional. I'll ask Stacey if she has any further comments to that.
Associate Director Gregory?
Yeah, nothing further to add at this time unless there are specific questions.
The reason I brought the portal up, when we did our survey however many weeks ago it was now and asked parents what their thoughts were about sending their child back to school, if they would be returning first thing or not, I think that it's important to bear in mind that that was a snapshot of a moment in time and that the world changes almost hourly right now. And so thoughts and opinions will naturally just change alongside it. And so I think it's such an important piece for staff as they're piecing together what the start of the school year looks like in the classroom and online. That information become available as soon as possible, which I know all of you know, but I felt was worth saying. I did have another question around social distancing. So a piece of feedback that I've received from multiple families over the course of the last number of weeks has been around social distancing. First, the ministry's announcement really made it seem like the classroom would almost be like a bubble, that you could interact with the people in your classroom, not really need to think about social distancing. It wouldn't be a hindrance to regular school days. Is that something that we are continuing in the mindset of, or looking to the next school year, are we going to be asking students to stay only at their desk all of the time, limiting the touching of same objects? So I think about manipulative. So, for example, like a math manipulative, using those cubes or those carrot stick-shaped things, where normally multiple children or students would be using those in the course of a period of the day, will objects like that are pretty commonplace just be eliminated from the classroom entirely? What does that kind of look like?
Associate Director, but I will point out, I think page 3.3 under D, which talks about a layer or sub-cohort, might offer part of that explanation. But Associate Director?
Thank you, and through the chair, and thank you, Trustee Buck, for the question. Again, going back to our guiding principles and the work with public health, this does evolve on a fairly regular basis, and it will depend on the scenario that we find ourselves in at any given time, and our understanding from the Ministry of Education that further guidelines will be provided later this week. So some of the answers to that may be found in some of those guidelines. But in general, we are continuing to proceed with minimizing the disruption to regular school day routines, while at the same time maintaining through the advice of public health that once in a classroom, students should remain in that classroom, which is also why we've indicated that students would not travel from one classroom to the next, but rather that if there are different teachers involved with different curriculum areas, that they would come into the classroom. In terms of some of the shared curricular resources, highlighted in the report as well as some of the work that our program division and our specialized services continue to do in terms of some of these shared curricular resources. We recognize that many of these resources are extremely valuable educationally,